Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED. From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, how deepfakes or AI-generated images, audio, and video have become more believable, harder to detect, and faster and cheaper to make. UC Berkeley computer scientist Hani Farid says we need to be on the lookout for this rapidly advancing technology as the November election approaches. Deepfakes are continuing to be weaponized, and detection systems are not the only answer to rooting out manipulated content. Farid shared the stage with me to talk about all of this in front of a live audience on March 2nd at Night of Ideas in San Francisco. We bring you that conversation after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. You may remember last year's viral image of the Pope in a white puffer jacket, which was fake. Or, more recently, you may have seen the video of a bustling Tokyo street blanketed in snow that didn't actually exist, but was generated by OpenAI's text-to-video generator called Sora. These fake videos and images are becoming more believable and easier to make. So how can we become better equipped to tell real from fake, and more importantly, avoid becoming indifferent to the distinction? I tackled the subject with UC Berkeley professor and digital forensics and deepfake expert Hani Farid. He joined me and producers Caroline Smith and Susie Britton to demonstrate the capabilities of AI-generated video and audio, including a deepfake of my voice. This was at Night of Ideas at the San Francisco Public Library, March 2nd. All right, welcome everyone. Thank you for being here, and welcome Hani Farid.
Nice to be with you again.
So, tonight, of course, we're going to be talking about how advanced deepfakes have gotten. We talked back in 2019 about where things were, so we're going to talk about how far things have gone in the last 5 years. Yeah. But before we start all that, I do just want to gauge, how worried are you about the threat of deepfakes in the 2024 election?
I suppose it depends on the day and on the hour. These days, I'm pretty worried. And I'm worried not because of hypothetical threats, not because we're looking at the technology and thinking, oh, this could happen, but because we are seeing it. So we have seen what appears to be election interference in Slovakia. We have been seeing it in Bangladesh. We are seeing it in India. We're seeing it in Mexico. We're seeing it in Brazil. We're seeing it here in the U.S. In fact, we saw it weeks ago in New Hampshire in the first primary. And so, you know, the thing you have to understand about elections both here and abroad, oh, and by the way, this year there are 70 worldwide elections and 2 billion people. And very much what happens on other parts of the world affects us on this side of the world as well. So we should very much care about those 2 billion people voting. And we are very thin margins, right? And when you have very thin margins, you don't have to move a lot of votes. In this country, you move 80,000 votes, and that's the ball game.
Not only is it 8,000 votes, but you know where you should move those 8,000 votes. You know which counties you should target for those 8,000 votes in any particular state.
And I know how to target them because they're on social media. So I can carpet bomb their Facebook feeds and their Instagram feeds and their TikTok feeds, and it doesn't have to be state-sponsored actors. But if you look at the Biden example that happened in New Hampshire, it was a magician from New Orleans who was paid $150 to create the deepfake audio. That's insane.
So just to remind our listeners, if you don't know, it was a robocall of Joe Biden telling people not to vote.
There he
to
is.
Save their vote for November.
So can I play the audio?
Please.
Yeah, so if you don't know the story, it was election night in New Hampshire. And somewhere between 5 and 20,000 people were receiving phone calls, and I'm going to play 2 audio clips, and this is what the phone call sounded like.
It's important that you save your vote for the November election. Voting this Tuesday only enables the Republicans in their quest to elect Donald Trump again.
I'm going to play one more
clip.
You
know the value of voting Democratic when our votes count. It's important that you save your vote for the November election.
So people were getting this call. It took the Attorney General of New Hampshire 2 weeks to figure out who it was and where it was coming from. And meanwhile, we're off to South Carolina for the next vote. So when these things are happening on election night, that should worry us a great deal.
So how did this dude who was paid $150 make this? How easy was it to actually make
it? So this is what's great about the story. So we were contacted by law enforcement shortly after this came out, and we analyzed the audio. And this is sort of my bread and butter. We analyze audio to try to figure out if it's real or not, but we also try to figure out who created it and where was it created. And we had traced it back to a very particular service, and I'm not going to say the name of it because I don't want to encourage bad behavior. And I can go. This is a service that I pay $5 a month for, and I can upload somewhere between 60 and 90 seconds of somebody's voice, and then it clones their voice. And it could be a voice that it's never heard before. It doesn't have to be Joe Biden, right? It can be anybody. And then I just type. And I type, and it hands me back an audio script of that person talking. In fact...
yes, I was told that you made one of my voice, and I have absolutely no idea what I or a deepfaked me is going to say.
Okay, so before I play this, I just want to say, if you don't like what you're being said, blame Caroline, because she told me to do it. Okay, so I'm going to tell you what I did. So Caroline sent me a three-minute clip of you, which, by the way, I could have gotten anywhere. You didn't have to send that to me. And I uploaded it to the service, and in about 15 seconds, it said, okay, what do you want Mina to say? And I typed in the script, and in about another 15 seconds, I got this audio, and I'm going to play it for you right now.
Oh, my God. Nick Kim. For years, the scientific community has told you that human-induced climate change is real, but it is not, according to a report just published in the journal Nature. Those images of polar bears on melting ice? Fake. Humans aren't affecting the climate at all, so forget about public transportation. Throw your recycling in the trash. Shut down those noisy wind farms. Advocate for more plastic production. And stay tuned for more from KQED, your trusted news source.
Why would you say that?
I cannot believe how much that does sound like.
The cadence is amazing. By the way, I don't know if you heard it, but at the very end, I did something very intentional where you say KQED.
Yes, you did it slower than I would ever say it.
And I did that on purpose because I wanted you to hear a little glitch. And to understand that when you create these things, when you're typing, you have to be a little careful. You create basically the intonation in the way you type the letters. So if I put a couple of dots after a word, there'll be a pause. If I do all caps, it'll emphasize. If I put a question mark, it'll raise the voice. So it actually is aware of the way I'm typing, and I can change intonation. When you and I talked back in 2018, 2019, you couldn't do this. The technology 5 years ago was designed to clone a specific person's voice. So the first really good voice cloning was a small company up in Toronto called Dessa had cloned Joe Rogan's voice. They had injected 8 hours of his recording, and after a year and a half of work, they were able to clone one person's voice, Joe Rogan, and that was it. And we were like, hey, that's really cool. This is what's called one-shot learning. It's been trained on lots and lots of different people, and then it can get a voice that it has never heard before and clone it. And by the way, it can do it in English, it can do it in Spanish, it can do it in French, it can do it in foreign languages, it can do accents, and it is getting better and better, and it costs me $5 a month. And by the way, their safeguard is that when I upload an audio, it says, click this box to say you have permission to use this person's voice.
That you have permission to use this person's voice. So is audio, video, image, are they all moving at the same pace of advancement? Are they all getting to this point where you can make this quickly, cheaply, and very high quality?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things happening. So one is, and if you thought this was bad, just wait a little bit. I would say they're all progressing at reasonable, they're all sort of happening around the same pace. Audio really sort of skyrocketed because there was some just really good innovations in the underlying machine learning. And so what you do is you go to one of these services called Midjourney Stable Diffusion DALL-E, and you type a picture of Pope Francis in a white puffer coat, and it generates that image. Super cool. And some guy had made this, and it put it on a Facebook group for generative AI examples. And it had gotten out of there and went on Twitter and went supernova viral, and people thought it was real. And what was really great about this story is when he was asked, why did you do this? And it was some guy from New Jersey. He said, I was just tripping on mushrooms. And I thought, yeah, that would be pretty great. So this stuff is incredible. If you haven't played around with DALL-E or Midjourney Stable Diffusion, it's amazing. And if I may, I want to point out a few things about what people are doing with these images.
Yeah.
So this is an example from last year, May of last year. It's a not very good example of a fake image of the Pentagon being bombed. And it went viral on Twitter because Elon Musk and his infinite wisdom decided that it would be really smart to allow media, to allow anybody to have a certified account for $8 a month. Right. And so somebody was imitating Bloomberg News and posted this image. And in 2 minutes, the stock market dropped $500 billion. In 2 minutes. That's insane.
And the way that the person generated this was just to type this in. Yeah. They just said, oh, I want a realistic photo of a bombing at the Pentagon. And this is what it generated.
Yeah. And because I'm a nerd, I'm going to explain to you how this stuff works. It's really amazingly simple and beautiful. And then we're going to talk about video. So text to image is actually doing two things in one. It's generating images, but it's generating images that are semantically consistent with a prompt, with a caption. And so there's actually some language understanding there as well as creating the image. And that's really cool. And the way it works is these systems have gone out on the internet and scraped billions and billions of images. In fact, many of the images that people in this room probably have posted online and that your news organization have posted online, and those images have captions. So for example, the caption, a diverse group of people sitting at a bar in an elegant wine tasting lounge in Northern California drinking and chatting. It's a descriptive caption of the image. And what these machine learning algorithms do is they take that image and they start corrupting it with what we call additive noise. And eventually it gets to the very end there where it's just completely incoherent. You've just destroyed the image. And it learns how to reverse the process conditioned on the caption. So it learns 6 billion times how to take something that's completely nonsense and remove the corruption until you get an image that is semantically consistent with the caption. And it's done that 6 billion times. And then when you type Pope Francis in a white puffer coat, it starts with a random noise image and goes backwards. That's what it's learned to do. And it's incredibly complicated when you look at the details of the underlying algorithms, but conceptually it's a very simple idea. And the reason why I think this is important is to understand that there are really major breakthroughs in machine learning and AI and statistics and computer science, but really what we are experiencing is a data revolution. The reason we have ChatGPT, the reason I can clone your voice, the reason I can make these images is because for the last 20 years, we have all been uploading massive amounts of data that the computers have now learned from us, the creative process.
You're listening to my conversation with UC Berkeley computer scientist and deepfake expert, Hani Farid. Recorded on March 2nd at Night of Ideas, held at the San Francisco Public Library. Night of Ideas is a free public event that brings together thinkers and artists and cultural organizations to contemplate a future that's more just, vibrant, and sustainable. More of our conversation with Hani Farid after the break.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're listening back to my conversation about deep fakes and the 2024 election with UC Berkeley computer scientist Hani Farid, recorded at Night of Ideas in San Francisco, March 2nd. I asked Farid about AI generators like Sora that could create a realistic video from a simple text prompt, like a bustling Tokyo street covered in snow. We continue.
So, just last week, OpenAI released something called Sora. Google has an example of this as well. And now you type, a beautiful snowy Tokyo city is bustling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it doesn't generate an image, it generates this. 100% fully AI generated. This is completely generated by a machine. Now, there's no audio in this, but in 6 months there will be. You will start to hear the sounds of the street behind it. So now imagine a world where it's not generating an image of the Pentagon being bombed, but a video of the Pentagon being bombed. A video of Joe Biden saying X. A video of anything you can imagine. Now, lots of cool things. I have a prediction. I have a prediction that in the next decade, the next Steven Spielberg is going to be a 16-year-old with an incredible imagination sitting at home doing this. Because you don't need a multi-million dollar studio. You don't need cameras. You don't need lights. You don't need actors. You just need an amazing imagination. So that's cool.
Is there anything, though, that you can do to sort of know? I know it's really hard. You mentioned how you slowed down the way that I said KQED, as if somebody would be like, oh, that's probably fake.
Yeah.
But, you know, are there certain mistakes that a lot of creators frequently make so that you can maybe stop and say, there's something not quite right about this. Like, I'm looking at this, and this is incredible because this is totally AI generated. This is not a scene in Tokyo.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the woman's eyes, and I'm like, I'm wondering if her eyes are, like, tiniest bit off.
And
right?
If you start looking carefully, you'll see this. But here's what I can tell you. From the first version of DALL-E, when you and I talked 5 years ago, to today, many of the obvious visual artifacts have gone away. This is version 1.0 of text-to-video. So my bread and butter is developing techniques to detect manipulated media. And if I'm lucky, the shelf life of that technique is about a year, where we can find something that is consistent. And then we have to innovate again and innovate again and innovate again, because this stuff is getting good really, really fast. Now, there's a whole nother, since we're talking about detection, there's sort of two branches of detection. There's what we call proactive and reactive. The reactive is you just wait. You wait for the robocall. You wait for the image of the Pentagon being bombed. You wait for something to go online. Somebody sends it to me. We analyze it. But at that point, the world has sort of moved on. The half-life of a social media post is measured in seconds. So 50% of all views happens in the first 30 seconds. So by the time I get eyes on it, it's sort of too late. And if it's 24 hours before election night, it's absolutely too late. So mostly what we do is we do postmortem. Really good in courts of law, national security, helping media outlets. But in the speed with which the internet is moving, that's a tough gig. Now, the other techniques are called proactive. And so those techniques say to the OpenAIs of the world and the Googles of the world and the Facebooks of the world, you are generating content that could be very creative and exciting and cool, but also has nefarious uses. So we are going to, please, would you, right now these are voluntary, put in digital watermarks into the audio, image, and video that we then can detect downstream to say this is AI generated. Not good, not bad, not allowed, not allowed, but just detection. Now, of course, watermarks can be ripped out, so this is an adversarial game, but anything we can do to start to put in some speed bumps and some friction into the system, I think will be good. But I will tell you, if you look at the trends of the last 5 years, our ability to reason about the world is going to get harder and harder and harder because of this content. And it's important to understand, too, that it's not just that people are creating fake content and then that's being passed off as real. There's real content that then people are trying to claim is fake. Right? So it goes both ways. Because if you live in a world where things can be fake, well, nobody has to admit to a hot mic gaffe or a video of a police violence or human rights violations or really anything at this point. Anything. Right? You don't like what it says. It's fake. It's a deep fake. And in fact, this is happening on a daily basis. And so that, I think, is going to be a worrying trend.
Yeah.
So last summer, I had a student, Maddie Bohatchik. He was then a high school student. Now he's a freshman at Stanford University, and he spent the summer with me. And I tasked him with making a deep fake of Anderson Cooper, so doing both audio and video. So you saw the example of your voice, but now I can get you to actually say those words. Now I'm going to do this with Anderson Cooper instead. So his task was to clone Anderson Cooper's voice. That was pretty easy. And then to create a whole full-blown video of Anderson Cooper saying whatever we want him to say. So let me play the audio, the video for you, and then we'll talk about how we did it.
For this episode, we spent a lot of time with Professor Hani Farid of UC Berkeley, a leading expert on media forensics and synthetic media, and Having spent a week with him, let me just say, what a dip.
For the record, I did not ask him to have him say that. By the way, this is the only one I could play in company. You should see what the other ones are like. So this was a high school kid, a very talented one, in fairness, who basically spent his summer making Anderson Cooper, and we can now get Anderson Cooper to say anything we want.
Yeah.
And it's pretty good. So this is what's called a lip sync deep fake, where we only modified the mouth part of his mouth. And by the way, this is now about 9 months old. The version we have now is so much better. I mean, it's amazing when you look at even just 9 months ago what we were able to do compared to today. So this is really good. So this is called the lip sync, where I just took a video of Anderson Cooper from one of the shows. I gave it a new audio, and it just modified his mouth to say what I wanted him to say. Now there's another type of a deep fake video. So these are called face swap deep fakes. Lots of really fun, you know, things you can do, but really, really nasty things you can do too. So for example, we've been hearing case after case almost every day now in this country and abroad where young women's faces are being inserted into sexually explicit material. And then that content is being distributed, and it is awful. It is really, truly awful. And it's primarily affecting women. And by the way, you can go to Google right now, to their website, and you can search, make deep fake nudes, and it will surface dozens of websites that say, put women into explicit material. They're not even trying to pretend, by the way, that this is not what they're doing. And by the way, those websites are being powered by Visa and MasterCard, and you gotta ask the question, what are we doing here, allowing this stuff? I mean, great, I'm all for this, right? But there's a point at which this is becoming a little ridiculous. And what you should understand about this technology is it's all open source. This is an open source model that I have the source code to that I run my laptop. I don't even have to pay a service for this. And 15-year-olds can now run this. And it's getting pretty nasty. So we are very worried about this as well. So now, not only do you have to worry about YouTube and Instagram and TikTok, which, by the way, it has always been true, but now you get on Zoom calls and you're not 100% sure who's on the other side of that call. And by the way, this is not hypothetical. 2 weeks ago, a guy in Hong Kong lost $25 million because he thought he was talking to his chief financial officer. And he was not. He was talking to a hacker. And by the way, last year, the mayors individually of Madrid, of Berlin, and Vienna were on a call with who they thought was the mayor of Kyiv. And it was the Russians that he were talking to. Yeah. Oh, here's another scam that's going on that's really popular. Because so many interviews are now happening on Zoom calls, people are starting to create deep fakes, interviewing for jobs, getting into companies, taking the signing bonus, and or stealing intellectual property. And companies are now starting to get attacked through these Zoom calls because they don't know who they're talking to at the other end. Yeah.
So with all things like this, tools like this, which is just so hard to believe, but yet so believable at the same time that this is where we are. It's not, all of these things are only bad because they're being used that way, right?
Yeah.
Or because they have the capacity to be distributed so broadly, so widely, so quickly.
Yeah.
So what role do you feel like? I mean, you talked a little bit about the role that creators can play by watermarking so that people know when things are AI generated.
Yeah.
But what role do, you know, your traditional distribution channels for these kinds of things, what role can they play? What responsibility do you feel like they have in all of this?
So we should definitely talk about the AI, but you have to understand that this technology exists in a larger ecosystem, right? So what's the ecosystem? The ability to create content, and that's all of this, and we should hold the companies like the ones who are allowing audio voices to be cloned without any checks and balances, we should hold them accountable, right? There should be a consequence for having a tool that is so powerful and without safeguards. But then it's the telecoms who are allowing robocalls, and by the way, profiting to the tunes of billions of dollars for allowing those robocalls. It's the TikToks of the world and the Twitters of the world and the Facebooks of the world who continue to become multi-trillion dollar companies off of the backs of scams and lies and disinformation. We should hold those people accountable. It's the financial institutions that power many of these websites for monetizing harmful content. There is a service out there, by the way, that you can go to and you can pay to get a deep fake voice or video footprint of all the major CEOs of banks in this country. How does this website exist? It's mystifying to me. right? And then there's all of us, right? So we can create stuff and we can distribute it. But then there's a lot of us who are out there clicking and resharing and re-liking without thinking very thoughtfully about whether this is true or not. And we are part of the problem as well. And then, of course, there are the politicians who are big fat liars who take advantage of this whole, you know, confusion that we have. And so there's, and then, of course, there's our regulators who have fallen asleep at the wheel for the last 20 years and are still trying to figure out how to wrangle this. And so there is responsibility up and down the chain. So the one good news I have here, because I'm getting a little depressed and there's no bourbon in these things, so, you know. the one good news is, as compared to 20 years ago, where I really felt like we buried our head in the sand and pretended that the internet is just awesome and everything is great and let's not worry about it, at least we're having conversations. Like, if you go to the Hill, if you go to Brussels, if you go to the UK, there are serious people having serious conversations. I don't think we have solutions yet, but at least we are aware that there is something brewing and we can't just pretend the tech industry will be fine, let's not worry about it.
We talked a little bit earlier about just how hard these are to detect and how to kind of, you know, trust your instincts a little bit in these kinds of things. Yeah. But I do wonder, are there available detection tools for the general public? Yeah. Is there a website or something that you can upload something to say, hey, is this real?
No. And in fact, the answer is yes and no. There are tools out there that are available to the public, but you should not use them, and here's why. Because they're not reliable. So I'll give you a really concrete example of this. In the early days of the violence in the Middle East, Prime Minister Netanyahu tweeted out an image of some of the violence that of a photo had been taken. And somebody took that photo and uploaded it to one of these services, and it said that it was AI generated, which would have suggested that the Prime Minister had tweeted out something that was fake. And in fact, they were wrong. It was not AI generated. It was just that these things misfire. So I'm gonna change your question a little bit, which is not, are there services that can do this, but can they do it reliably? And that reliably is really important. And the answer is absolutely 100% no, because it's a really hard problem, and we do not yet have the tools that would allow the average consumer to do that. So the way we have been building the tools is we don't think they're ready for prime time for 4 billion people in the world. So what we do is we make them available to journalists, because we think that they have the sophistication and the nuance and the time to reason about the content. We give them the tools, and then we hope that they can then inform the public. I would like that tool to be more readily available, but it's just not where the technology is right now.
And it sounds like we have a question from Peter in the audience. Where's Peter?
Yes, hi. I guess I have two short things. One is, I've seen that apparently you're a Google scholar as well as a professor at UC Berkeley. And I'm wondering what that means and how that might affect your perspective. And the other thing is, regardless of how things are happening, by what technical mechanism, isn't there some kind of overall law against fraud? So if somebody copies somebody's face and their voice to perpetrate a fraud, Why isn't there something to protect us about that, even if I might not have a copyright on my face?
Okay. So you're absolutely right that fraud is fraud, and it doesn't matter if it's AI powered or not. But the creation of non-consensual sexual imagery is in a legal gray area. There are various state laws of varying degrees of power, but there's no federal law against it. And when it comes to public figures, the rules are very different than, and I think you actually may very well be a public figure. So the rules are different for private citizens than they are for public figures. I don't know if I understand the first part of it, but I think you were asking that if I have ties to the private, to the industry, to the tech sector? Yes. I'm not a Google scholar, I'm a LinkedIn scholar, and those are very different, by the way. The reality is that almost anybody in computer science has some relationship to the tech industry. Either there's funding, our students do internships there. I absolutely have taken funding from Facebook and from Google. I do a lot of work with LinkedIn. You know, one of the great things about tenure is I get to take people's money and then tell them why they're wrong. And I think that's great. And so I think we have to be careful when you get too close to the industry that you're trying to criticize. But if you've read anything I've said about the tech industry in the press, I don't think you'll think I'm biased for the tech industry.
It sounds like we have a question from Sarah, or it looks like, a computer science PhD.
Oh, hey, yeah, thank you for that question. So I am excited that people give a about AI, because this is what I've done for a long time. But you're mentioning the amount of time that it takes to model a voice. And the reality is that it's closer to 7 seconds. So one thing I've done is tell every elderly person I know to have a safe word with younger folks, because of maybe 30 years ago we had spam, and then we had a different spam filter, and then we had different spam, and then we had different spam filter. So are you thinking about this as a journey that's kind of chasing, like the rabbit chasing something? Because that's the way a lot of us are.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, the first point of your question is, how much audio do you need to clone? And it is sometimes between seconds and minutes. I think if you want to get really high quality audio, it's closer to 1 minute, but I don't want to quibble about a few seconds because it doesn't really matter, honestly. To your point, this is a really good idea and you should all do this. My wife and I have a safe word, which is if she gets a phone call or if I get a phone call and it says I'm in trouble, we say, what's the safe word? I actually right now have forgotten it, so I'm gonna have to go back and look it up. But thanks for reminding me. I love this, by the way, because it's a low-tech solution to a high-tech problem. But now back to your other question, which is this sort of a ongoing war? And the answer is yes, it's an arms race. I will build better defenses, you will build better offenses, and I will build better defenses, and so on and so forth. But that's actually okay. And here's why. Because right now, the magician in New Orleans for $150 can start making robocalls in New Hampshire. And we need to stop that. And if we eventually get to the point where you have to be a sophisticated state-sponsored actor or a well-resourced organization, well, then that's a threat I can live with. But I can't live with a threat where there are literally tens, hundreds of millions of people who can interfere with my election. So for me, the way I think about it is to raise the bar, but there will always be a bar where somebody can jump over it. And I think that's what we have to live with. And I think that's just the reality of cybersecurity.
Let me take one more for the time being. This is from Steve.
Thank you. I just had a question about the remark you made around journalism. And with the, you know, increased polarization, partisanship in journalism, it sounded like you were using that as a potential screen. How do you really ensure that when you're giving, you know, using the journalistic integrity, quote unquote,
yeah,
that supposedly exists, that you're actually getting the result that you're desiring and actually achieving the truth?
I got to tell you, that keeps me up at night. Here's what I think, and I don't want this to come off as partisan, because it's not. I think we have problems on both sides of the political aisle.
More of our conversation with Hani Farid after the break.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
I'm Mina Kim. You're listening to Forum and my conversation about deepfakes with UC Berkeley computer scientist Hani Farid, recorded at Night of Ideas in San Francisco, March 2nd, before a live audience.
We live in a country right now where 25% of Americans believe that the FBI was responsible for the January 6th insurrection. We live in a country where 20% of people believe that Bill Gates created COVID to put a tracking device in them. I don't know what to do with that 20 to 25% of the population. I think that's a tough gig, because it's not just that they believe things that are objectively untrue. It's that they also believe that there is a concerted effort by the government, by the media, and by scientists to keep that information from them. So when I tell them that we have run this mathematical analysis I'm part of the problem. I'm a Berkeley professor. When you tell them what the truth is, you're a Bay Area liberal loving whatever. And which is true, but that's not the point, right? Of course.
Really quick, though, the journalist in me wants to know those stats that you got. Where did you get those from? 25%?
I will tell you. So we have actually done the surveys, and multiple surveys over and over again have shown those numbers. And by the way, that 20% who believes that Bill Gates created COVID tracks with the number of people who are not getting vaccinated for COVID. So those numbers actually match up pretty well. And those numbers have been repeated over and over again. So back to, if I can just finish the question, is I don't know what to do with that bottom 20-25%, but I'm hoping that there's this chunk in the middle that I can help. And then we have a bigger problem, which is to regain trust. And I'm a computer scientist, so I don't know how to do that.
But I think what you're sort of raising, and so is Steve, is this idea that it's not like AI created the kind of polarization that we're seeing. It's not as if AI, I mean, it's not as if it is what is behind.
It's an amplifying factor.
And so that's what I want you to do, is to sort of characterize for me the role you think it plays in our current moment.
Good. Okay, that's a great question. So absolutely 100%. Even before there was the internet, it's not like we didn't lie and there wasn't conspiracies, but the internet made it worse because it made it so that you can spread a lie around the world instantaneously and reach millions of people. And so everything is an amplifying factor. So what is the amplifying factor with AI? It's in a couple of places. So one is the bots that are manipulating social media are now fully automated by AI. So you don't need humans in a room trying to type things out. You just have bots doing this, and they're adapting very quickly, right? Because they're learning what are the things that get engagement, what are the things that trigger people. So those things now is becoming more efficient. And now you don't just have to lie about something, you can generate an image to support it. You can create a video of it, you can create an audio of it. And that visual input is much more compelling to people. So everything is an amplifying factor. And then of course there are the algorithms that are driving all of social media that are putting you into deeper and deeper echo chambers to maximize user engagement. And that is now being powered by ever more powerful AI. So I think all of these things are part of a larger ecosystem, but I do think it's an amplifying factor.
Let me go to Usman.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a physician, I do cancer research, and I work with machine learning specialists, and I do some machine learning myself in research on cancer research. But like what you're talking about is extremely alarming, and you know a lot of the things are around us already. And you talked a lot about private actors and industry and other bad actors that, you know, are private individuals. What happens if the government or, let's say, factions within the government, right, decide to wage an information war using all these techniques on us, right, as voting citizens? What do we have, right? Because now we cannot rely on the protection of the government, right? Because now we're the victims of a government, right, a government. But, like, what do we do, right? Because now, you know, whether it's Trump or Biden or Kennedy or whoever else is going to, you know, come out of the woodwork, right? Everything they might say could be doctored, right, so to speak.
Yeah.
And how do we, you know, pursue freedom in a country where this is exactly, you know, if information is no longer free, you know, what recourse do we have as private citizens in order to make sure that the government isn't taking advantage of us? What can we do?
Yeah, not a lot. And I think democracy dies without a free press. If we don't have really, really vigorous protections for press, for reporters, for access to information, there is no democracy. So I think, you know, our ability, so you should give money to KQED. no kidding. I mean, I think that is the front lines. Right, is a vigorous press. And I think here, for now, I feel pretty good, but there are other parts of the world where you cannot say that. And I don't know how democracy survives when the government has these very powerful tools that they can further leverage against their citizens.
Well, one thing I can tell you that really scares me is when thinking people, our voters and so on, basically say, well, I don't know what to believe. Right? And it's almost that moment of giving up on even trying that scares me the most.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've heard that, by the way, from friends and colleagues who are like, it's just so messy, screw it. Right? So that's actually really interesting, too, because you don't actually have to distort the entire record. You just have to muddy the waters. right? Just muddy the waters enough that people are like, all right, whatever. Like, you know, 20% of what I read is fake, so screw it, I'm going to give up. So it actually doesn't take a lot to really get people to check out. And that, I think, is where authoritarianism thrives.
So I do want to bring up a few things that government regulators have tried to do, things that they try to do in California. You talked a little bit about things at the federal level, but the California legislature has introduced 5 bills this session, specifically focused on deep fakes, and they were doing things like banning materially deceptive election-related deep fakes 120 days before an election and 60 days after, requiring social media platforms to identify and label AI-generated content, and so on.
Yeah.
I know you've looked at this. How effective do you think it will be?
It's a Band-Aid on a, you know, compound fracture, but it's fine. I don't mind the state of California, of all states, trying to do this. And I've been having a lot of conversation with folks up in Sacramento, and it's good. Here's I think if you want to look at two really good, thoughtful pieces of how to move forward, you look at Biden's executive order from last year on overall AI, not just about generative AI, but overall. And the EU AI bill, which they have been working on now for 4 years and is really thoughtful. And what I really like about it is that they take what's called a risk-based approach. So they don't want to say AI and medicine and cancer research should be regulated the same way of the ability to clone a person's voice. So they look at the risk associated with the technology, and then the barriers and the responsibilities get higher and higher for that. In fact, I was just up in Sacramento last week with some folks from the EU talking to our colleagues in the assembly, and we are now trying to harmonize the way we think about these things. So the last thing you want is this patchwork of regulation all over the world trying to, you know, it's a big world and the internet doesn't know boundaries. So what I've been advocating for, both in the EU, here in California, on the Hill, in the UK, and Australia, and Singapore, which is the governments that are right now are thinking most seriously about this, liberal democracies, is to harmonize around a particular set of ideals. And maybe we'll tweak them a little bit, but what I like about the state doing this is I don't think this can be regulated at the state level, but I'm hoping that it puts pressure on the federal government to act. And I think that there's good pieces of floating around, but now we have to execute on it.
So there are some, you've talked about how regulating political speech, especially their use of AI and so on, is a tricky business. Why is it tricky? What makes political or campaign speech tricky?
Because I should be able to make a video of Biden or Trump and criticize them. We should be able to criticize our politicians. It's important. But so the way I'm thinking, and political speech is particularly tricky because of our First Amendment, right? And by the way, there's no law in this country that says you can't lie as a politician. I'm allowed to lie. That's protected, right? Now, obviously, defamatory fraud is a very different thing. So when it comes to criticizing our politicians, I think we have to tread very lightly. So what I've been advocating for, particularly around this very tricky issue around the First Amendment and free expression, is simply disclosure. That if you're going to create a fake video of Biden or Trump, it's fine, but it has to be clearly labeled and disclosed, right? It can't be deceptive. Because I think once you get in the business of banning speech, things are going to end very badly. And so I'm all for consent, not for political things, because I think that you don't need a consent to make a fake of the president, but for other people, and then disclosure. So if I'm going to create a fake of you, I should get permission. Your producer, by the way, gave me permission.
but there are some interesting areas where, well, politicians are using it. For example, they're generating AI versions of themselves so that they can reach out to constituents. They're doing things like creating AI versions of themselves that can speak in a language that's specific to a community that they want to reach. Is that acceptable?
Yeah. Oh, man, this is such on the line. Okay, let me give you 2 examples. So Mayor Adams was doing robocalls in Yiddish and in Mandarin. He does not speak either of those languages. And what was really interesting about this, and he says this himself, is that when he walks down the streets of New York City, people come up to him and say, oh, I didn't know that you spoke Mandarin or Yiddish. So people actually thought that he was. So I have no problem with him getting a message out in a different language, but I think he has to disclose it. I think he has to say this is an AI-generated voice. Dean Phillips took it one step further running for the Democratic ticket. He created a full-blown interactive AI bot where you can go to a website and you can type in a question and it would formulate an answer using a ChatGPT-like model at the back end that was trained on his you know, content. And then it would synthesize his voice, the way you saw, and then it would synthesize a video of him talking back to you. I think that's actually sort of cool. And it was disclosed. It kept saying, I'm an AI bot. Now, I think he has to be very careful there, because we know that GPT can sometimes go a little sideways, right? And it can start saying some things that are pretty weird. And so, you know, you buyer beware is what I'm saying there.
Yeah.
But I think as long as there is disclosure. But there's another issue that you want to be careful with, because if his AI bot is designed to manipulate you to vote for him. So imagine that the objective function for the AI is try to figure out what triggers this person and then tell them whatever it takes to get them to vote for you. I think that that should not be allowed. But if it is, I want to get my message out, this is what I stand on these issues, I think it's great. I think it's a really cool way of interacting with people, particularly in a world where there are multiple languages. But I think there has to be very clear disclosure and some guardrails.
All right, let's try to get one or two more questions from the audience. We've had a lot. Let's do Cyrus, then Rui. Cyrus?
Hi, thank you. My question is, how much responsibility or culpability do you think lies with tech entrepreneurs and kind of the, you know, new age tech CEOs who, in pursuit of profit and fame, kind of leave all the ethical stuff behind? Since I think especially with a lot of AI generation, it should be fairly obvious the ways it can be used for ill, but I feel like most of that is ignored, you know, by Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I think a lot. And here's the thing, and you said it exactly right. 20 years ago in the rise of the internet and social media, maybe we were naive. Maybe we didn't quite see the harms that were going to emerge over the next two decades. But you can't look at this technology today and being like, everything's gonna be fine, right? And so I think they absolutely have a responsibility. And one of the things that the Biden executive order says is that if you are in the business of generating technology for this that has both positive and negative aspects, you have to have a red team, which means you have to have a team that is pressure testing the systems to check what the vulnerabilities are. You have to do what's called safety by design. You can't deploy this thing, privatize the profits and socialize the costs, and then deal with it, you know, 10 years down the line. And so there's a lot in there that, again, is risk-based, but 100%. And I would go beyond the CEOs. I would go to the venture capitalists, who have often escaped scrutiny here, right, who are putting the billions of dollars backing these CEOs to burn the place to the ground to profit. And I think they all have responsibility.
We're listening back to my conversation with Hani Farid before a live audience on Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Rui.
Hi. So we've talked a lot about downside and bad actors, which is definitely terrifying. I'm curious, in your perspective, what's the upside? Like, in your greatest hopes and dreams, what is the potential of this technology?
Oh, that's such a sweet question. Thank you. I don't have any. No. So, okay, it depends on the content. So first of all, GPT, super cool. We were talking in the green room about, I'm a professor. You know, when I teach a class, I've got students across the ranges of abilities. Some struggle, some don't. I love the idea of a personalized bot that sits alongside my student, watches what they're doing, and says, oh, you don't understand this. Let's go watch this video, like a private tutor for them. I think that's really cool. So I think GPT, you can really see very powerful applications. And for now, I'm going to put aside the fact that this might destroy like 25% of the jobs in this country, because I'm trying to be
more
nice about this response. I think for audio voice cloning, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's a few things where people are losing their voice due to disease, and if they can capture the voice, I think that's really beautiful and powerful, so they have a voice synthesis. But, you know, most of the stuff I see with voice cloning outside of Hollywood seems sort of not very nice. I think on video generation, the text to video, I mean, the levels of creative things you can do that don't now require multi-million dollar studios. So I'm excited for creators. But I think we have to be very careful how we navigate the space, because all of this content is being created because it's scraped all the human-generated content. And this has to be a new tool that we give back to content creators, not something that replaces them. And I think as long as we're thoughtful about that, I'm really excited about some of the abilities to create images and videos and what that means for artists and graphic designers and photographers and filmmakers. It's an incredible tool.
But also just things in health and medicine and the research and the ability to come up with things that can cure or, you know, address
good. So let's
diseases.
Talk about
There's
outside.
There's so many amazing...
Yeah. So let's talk about the broader AI, because everything we're talking about here is really generative AI. But the broader field of AI, we had a question earlier about the role of AI in medicine. Absolutely. Reading mammograms and x-rays and CTs and being able to do early diagnosis and being able to be part of the drug discovery process is incredibly exciting. So there is definitely something happening in our world right now. I don't know exactly what it is, but there is definitely something happening. I think there's a lot to be excited about. But I think we can't pretend that there aren't dangerous aspects to the technology. And all we're asking for are guardrails. We're not saying stifle innovation. We're not saying don't do these things. But we're saying take advantage of the positive things and mitigate the harms. And I don't think that's asking too much.
And for you, that's really, it just starts with labeling, at least on a very basic level.
For me, that's what I call the floor. At the bare minimum, I just want to know what's what. Oh, and by the way, here's a really cool little nerdy aspect of why you asked about the CEOs of these companies. Why should they care about this? Now, I would like them to care because they have a moral compass, but I'm also not 12 years old, and I know that's not true. So what I've really gotten in my older age is trying to figure out how to align my incentives with their incentives, right? So I want a safer society that is better for all of us. They want to profit. Okay, I understand that. So how do I get them to care about what I care about? Here's something really cool about generative AI. What we and other people have started to discover is that as you start to take AI-generated content and feed it back into the models start to collapse. They start to produce gibberish. And we've seen this with GPT, we've seen it with the image models, we've seen it with the video and audio models, which means that if you're in OpenAI and you're in the business of indiscriminately scraping the internet for content, you are now getting your own content back, right? And that is a very bad thing for the models. And so we're really excited about this research because it means that I can encourage the OpenAIs of the world to start labeling everything so they don't poison their own models. Which is, by the way, it gets. You should see some of the images that it starts creating. It's like it's the stuff nightmares are made of.
So they have an incentive to make sure that there is quality, accurate information.
That's right, exactly.
That is out there. Well, we have reached the end of the hour. Goes by so fast. Thank you so much for being part of it with me and Hani Farid. And thank you also to Susie Britton and Caroline Smith, our producers who make Forum work. I'm so glad you get to see their faces because they're always behind the scenes. And then also Paul Lanker and Jim Bennett and KQED Live's Ryan Davis and Sarah Rose Leonard. They made this happen tonight. Thank you all. It's been wonderful to see all of you.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising-Simons Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.